even in the worst of the worst, you've had it for 20 years, it's full-blown autoimmune, and you have a genetic predisposition, we can still reverse 75% of your symptoms. And many of that, what that means for many people, is they can live medication and pain-free and have a normal life.
If you're tired of struggling with chronic illness, bloat, joint pain, foggy brain, mood swings, digestive issues, food intolerances, and feel like you've tried just about everything, countless treatments without finding relief, it's time to consider the power of gut health. The gut, often referred to as the second brain, is home to trillions of bacteria that play a crucial role in our digestion, immune system, and even our mood. Welcome back, athletes. I'm your host, Sherry Chaban, and with each episode, I am honored to be your coach and guide in the journey to fall in love with fitness and ultimately yourself. My intention in each episode is to help you release the old story of who you are and step into the one you are always meant to be. Through these conversations, together we step away from focusing on the doing and step into the being, so that health and fitness is not just what you do, but who you are. In this episode with Josh Deck, a gut health specialist and nutritionist, we're going to explore the fascinating world of gut health and its impact on our physical and mental health, one of my personal favorite conversations. We're going to dive into the root causes of gut disease such as Crohn's and colitis and discuss how we can heal and overcome these conditions, even though sometimes the diagnosis doesn't suggest so. Along the way, we're going to address common misconceptions, we're going to explore the link between gut health and hormones, and we're going to provide for you practical tips for improving our gut health through nutrition and lifestyle choices. Now, some of the topics that we're going to be discussing and what you're going to be walking away with today is learning how to identify and address the root cause of inflammation. We're going to talk about the different perspectives on nutrition for gut health that we oftentimes hear in society. We're going to talk about the limitations of relying solely on plant-based diets to overcome any symptoms or conditions you're currently feeling. We're going to talk about the importance of a holistic approach to gut health, the guidelines for optimal gut health, and finally, the importance of mindful eating and reducing stress when it comes to digestive issues. All right, athletes, now we are just about to get into it. And what I would like to invite you to do this week, if you are struggling with any unwanted eating behavior, any self-sabotaging behavior around nutrition or even your food choices, such as stress eating, overeating, compulsive overeating, binge eating, emotional eating, nighttime snacking, then I want to invite you to download my Food Freedom Workbook at makepeacewithfood.com. You're going to learn the 7 simple yet powerful tools to overcome unwanted eating behavior, because that's where we have to start our journey if right now our relationship with food is our limiting factor. Before we start to make changes around nutrition and lifestyle, let's address the elephant in the room, which is how we show up around food and ultimately what this actually shares with us in terms of our perspective around life. All right, athletes, now without further ado, let's meet Josh. Well, hey, Josh, welcome to the show.
Sherry, thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, such a pleasure also to see your energy. There's something about your light that's so contagious. I bet you've heard this your whole life.
Oh, it's the drugs for sure.
Can you share then?
They're mine, my precious.
That's good for gut health, right, Josh? All that.
The best, the very best.
What I love so much about just greeting you and just asking you, hey, how's it going? You're like, man, it's great. And I don't think I hear that often, right? Like, it's interesting. I had several calls today and I remember one person was like, it's all right. And someone else was like, I'm just surviving, you know, same old, same old. And so I'm super curious why it's so easy for you to just pop out the word great.
Oh, everybody just needs Jesus. I mean, for me, here's the thing is we can always be like living a life where like we dread one thing to the next. Even under the most stressful circumstances, there's still something to have joy about. And joy is a choice, right? Happiness can be a choice, but happiness is circumstantial. Joy is notwithstanding. And so if you decide you are going to be joyful, even in the bad, serious, stressful, horrible times, you're going to be able to exude happiness in any day. Like I can be slammed back to back. I'm not perfect. I'm still human. I get days where I'm ready to break down and jump off a 40-story building. But for the most part, you know, it is about committing to just like, I am going to be grateful. I am going to have joy. And big setbacks in the grand scheme of the rest of my life. I probably won't remember this 40 years from now. So I'm going to choose to just deal with it. And whatever happens, happens. If I'm late, whatever. If they don't show up, whatever. If this doesn't work, who cares? Like,
So good. You're so centered as you say that. And also, what I'm hearing you say is that joy is a state, and you get to decide that state. And then happiness is more the energy that flows in, flows out. Just another emotion, just like sadness, just like anxiety. And we have to be curious around what those emotions are. And speaking of emotions and as they relate to gut health, and a lot of conversations, of course, around mood, around joy in general, and around gut health. And you, of course, being the gut health specialist, before we dive into how all of that is related and what you can share around that, first, maybe share your story and why you got into holistic nutrition and why gut health in particular is your topic to focus on.
Well, as a quick segue, I used to be a paramedic. That was my first career. It was in my late teens, early 20s. I was doing that. And I realized very quickly it was sick care. I enjoyed trauma, car accidents and stuff like that. Physical trauma was always really exciting to do, but it was a lot of medical calls, a lot of the same things, same heart disease, same blood pressure, same diabetes. And they go to the hospital, they get drugs for the same issue, sent back home, they get more of the same or a new medication. That was it. Nobody ever got better. And I wanted people to be better. And so through a chain of events, I got into fitness and training and started working with other people. And my first glimpse into the ability of the human body, her name was Lynn. She was 57 years old when we came to see me. It was in my early 20s, one of my first clients when I picked up personal training full time. 57, took 17 pills and insulin for breakfast. She had 9 more prescriptions and medication for bedtime with more insulin. She had a CPAP machine, high blood pressure, and even at work, she was on the disability list. But at age 59, by just working on food and wellness and whole practices, she ended up breaking a world record in the raw powerlifting division as a weightlifter. And she kept breaking them till age 62 or whatever when she retired. It was amazing. But that's the ability of the human body when it's given the tools it needs to heal. And so through being in the wellness space, I ended up at a trade show where someone was actually talking about the microbiome and the gut. And I listened to her speak and I thought, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. And it was love at first sight. I was hooked. And so I started doing that. I saved up for a couple of years, went back to school. I became a nutritionist, and the rest is history. And now I specialize in Crohn's and colitis.
Wow, that's so good. That's so beautiful. And so many takeaways from the story. And I think what really actually struck out for me the most is not just reversing all of these conditions that normally, when we hear the diagnosis around, this is a life sentence, we have to continue to take this medication, and there's no way out of it. So, first, I do love that there's this shift in a holistic approach, all the different areas of her lifestyle. But I think what I love the most, Josh, is her age. And that at this age, because this is our limiting belief, isn't it, in society, that as soon as we hit a certain age, it's too late. There's no change possible. And now I'm hearing the story about somebody who not only in her late 50s was able to address all of her health issues, transform her nutrition, but also start to compete and set personal records around what normally would not have been possible.
Yeah, and she was off all but two medications. She came from 26 to 2 just strictly due to a medical intervention she had done. It was a surgery on her stomach. And so it was really amazing to see. But that's the potential of the human body when it's given the circumstances it needs. Because your body is always trying to heal itself. Any state of inflammation is actually your body trying to heal you. Inflammation is just a byproduct of white blood cells, right? Dilated blood vessels. And it hypersensitizes the nerves and also can put pressure on the nerves in the area, which is that pain sensation. But inflammation at its core is more blood in white blood cells in the area trying to heal you. That's all it is. And so we have to ask ourselves, why am I inflamed? And what is my body trying to heal from? If I can remove that, then has the circumstances it needs to heal itself. It's been trying. You can't go to the hospital with a thorn stuck in your hand and put ointment on for the pain. You have to pull the thorn out. So we have to ask in any illness, an inflammatory condition, or even in Crohn's colitis, where I specialize, they're considered autoimmune. There's nothing we can do. But the question is, what is your thorn? Just got off a call right before I came to see you here, Sherry, not 2 minutes before, with a fella. He's a new client. He's had it for 20, 30 years. Well, guess what? He's got a mold infection. It got never got addressed or treated. And that's leading his disease. So we all have them. For any problem you have in the body, there's always something driving it.
Wow. Wow. I love what you said, and especially getting into the root cause, because We can continue to put a band-aid on whatever's happening and continue to take the medication, but then that problem always persists. And so I love how you get into that. And so as we start to talk a little bit about Crohn's and colitis, before we move into how to heal and overcome, can we maybe talk about how does this manifest? Why do we start to see this? And more importantly, why are we seeing more and more of this lately?
Crohn's and colitis specifically, or gut disease as a whole?
I mean, even just as a whole, and I think even just Crohn's itself, this being something that I find now is way more common than it was, let's say, working with clients 10 or 20 years ago. This is now something that is, I think, somewhere where we need to create and focus on more attention. And it's interesting, Josh, because I had somebody on the podcast a few months ago, and he also was a bodybuilder, and he was a model, a fitness model, and he had gone through so many years of rigorous training and restrictive diets and ended up developing Crohn's, almost lost his life to it, and then started to address gut health to reverse that. And so I'm just curious around, first of all, how do we manifest that? So before we even talk about how do we heal from that, how does that even manifest in the body?
Amazing question. So if we look at gut disease, maybe the best way to state this is it's a spectrum, right? So often people will hear me talk about Crohn's and colitis and they're turned off unless they have it themselves, which 7 million people do right now worldwide. And so if people have it themselves, they're very hooked. But when I talk about this, I talk about the gut disease spectrum. Right now, maybe it's just bloat, constipation, diarrhea, cramping, pain. But if you picture it like wearing a pair of shoes with no socks and you start going for a run, you're going to rub, rub, rub until you go from red, blistered, raw, and bleeding. That is your relatively benign irritation of bloating all the way to your severe disease process of Crohn's and colitis. And so there are two main ways that these diseases happen to people, right? And again, it starts as one, it can get worse, the length of time is more severe. Some people it takes 20 years to develop, some people it's 2 months to develop, or days even. And so the number one thing we see is an acute infection or an acute insult to the gut bacteria or the gut tissues. So that's through someone, like I mentioned, gets a mold infection, right? There's very common ones. This fellow I'm talking about specifically, he actually worked in HVAC, perfectly healthy, got a new job in HVAC, 2 months in was diagnosed with IBS. 6 months after that, they diagnosed him with ulcerative colitis and said, well, it's genetic. It's because you're Jewish and yeah, just more prone to it. I'm like, that's a crap diagnosis. No pun intended. That's bullshit. I don't accept that. Well, the history said HVAC. We tested him and he's got mold in his body. One of the number one causes I've been seeing in the last few months in my practice. And 40% of homes in the USA have a mold problem. So, I mean, let's consider that. We also see acute direct insults from antibiotic use, acute trauma, either physical, psychological, emotional. We see it from some kind of Lyme disease, right? Some kind of infection. Maybe it's another bacterial infection. Something has to happen where it changes the landscape, basically. The other way these things accumulate is exactly that accumulation. So, for example, 20 years ago, you had your gallbladder out. Today, you've got inflammatory bowel disease. Well, it's a slow wear and tear like the heel in a shoe, where it progressively not producing bile, malabsorption, nutrient deficiencies on top of stress, on top of undigested food, on top of interventions and medicine and blah, 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 combined together, they create this wear and tear accumulation process leading to disease. And so anybody can get Crohn's and colitis. Like you mentioned, this healthy bodybuilder, under certain conditions, he developed Crohn's and colitis. And you're very right, Sherry. It is an issue. I recently did a lecture, and these are the numbers I pulled from the CDC and the World Health stats. Back in 1990, there was as low as 1.5, some estimates up to 3 million, but closer to 1.5 million cases of inflammatory bowel disease, both Crohn's and colitis, worldwide being treated by doctors. Today, in just 30 years, it's north of 7 million.
Yeah,
And,
right.
right? So we 5X'd in the last 30 years. And so doctors will say, well, it's genetic. Well, you can't possibly be genetic because one, 50% of those 7 million are in the USA and North America, which is less than 5% of the world population. So it can't possibly be just genetic. And if it's gone up fivefold in the last 30 years, it can't possibly be idiopathic or unknown cause. Otherwise, we're just refusing to look. Like if it is, we better figure it out. And so I attribute it to answer your question, why and how, to the 17,000 different pesticides, which is 19 times more than we had back in 1990 when cases were 5 times less. We pour 1 billion pounds of pesticides on our food every single year. The average American consumes 101.3 pounds of sugar per year or something like that. It's just insane. We have so much that's working against us. Chronic stress, chronic go-go-go lifestyles, hustle culture, even basic like comparative. Looking at Instagram, oh, I want that house. I want that swimsuit. I want this lifestyle. I want that body. We're never good enough. That's a chronic stressor. So combine these things together, and you've polluted the water so much, everybody's getting sick.
Right. So as you're talking, I'm just thinking to myself, okay, so you have this client who came to see you, and because of his new job in HVAC, he developed a mold issue, and boom, right? The rest is history. And I'm just curious why most of us would have just stopped at the diagnosis of the doctor, listened to whatever treatment was offered there, and not maybe got curious enough to really dig deeper to understand the root cause of the issue. Why do you feel that some of us maybe have this need to seek for more, that we don't just feel that that doctor's diagnosis is enough for us? And what can we do to actually bridge the gap and have this conversation and create more awareness around this topic?
It's changing your mind to change the culture, because the culture of the industry right now, Western medicine, and this the staggering difference from Western to functional medicine. Western medicine looks at this client of mine, right, in his 20s with mold. They look at him and go, "What are your symptoms? What is happening right now?" Once we have that, we classify you in this box. This is your disease. We are told in school this disease gets drugs 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 in this order if they don't work. Full stop. If the drugs don't work, well, we better cut out the organ because it's the organ's fault for being dysfunctional. Functional medicine goes, "Okay, what are your symptoms right now?" We stop there. I don't care about your diagnosis. It means nothing to me, right? That word is just a word that I use to instantly understand your symptoms. Oh, it's ulcerative colitis. Okay, perfect. Constipation, diarrhea, got it. That's all I need. I want to know why. So we have to go back to the beginning. An average doctor in North America gets anywhere from 7 to 11 minutes to sit with their patient, which gives them time to check their symptoms, update drugs, send them out. So we are managing sick care. But functional medicine, we'll sit down with you for an hour. Some people go up to 4 hours and go through and do a whole history, your life, your lifestyle. I want to know what's the home. Like, did you grow up? I had a conversation with a woman today and she's having these issues. And to her, it's like every time I'm stressed, I get triggered. I have an ulcerative colitis flare. That's where it came about, was a high time of stress. It was under the condition of having my mom was very sick and went in and had a heart attack and then a stroke. And then I miscarried a baby and I got colitis. I'm like, great. So we don't just get colitis from high stress. There has to be something else. We traced it back to her history. Well, turns out she also, a lot of mold, grew up in a home that was exposed to mold, ran through the questionnaires. We're going to run her a test now. She's actually waiting for a urine assessment, but we suspect mold was the underlying predisposing factor, allowing the stress, the psychological, emotional stress, to be the straw that broke the camel's back. And so most of medicine doesn't do that history, and they're trained to just give drugs. They are told that these diseases, Crohn's and colitis, are autoimmune. There's nothing you can do. Take the drugs and hope for the best. But the reality is that is sick care. Your body does not make mistakes like this. Autoimmunity doesn't fall to the sky and drop onto your head. There has to be some kind of driving force that caused the inflammation to start, which led to a severity of symptoms, which led to the severity of diagnosis and disease, which led to this problem. And eventually, right, that we talked about that spectrum of severity from bloat today to colitis next year. If you go beyond that threshold, now you have autoimmunity. But the people I'm seeing, they're told it's autoimmune, but no one's confirmed that. We haven't checked T cells, B cells, antibodies. We haven't checked titers. We haven't checked specific antibodies to that disease. And even then, only 40 to 60% of them actually have these antibodies, but those can be made by drugs or other things. So we're classifying things with an umbrella without actually taking into account a client history to see why and how it got here in the first place. And this is how we can reverse these diseases with 90% success plus.
Wow, right. And so as you're talking about reversing these diseases, is there a point of no return? So is there, let's say, a person or let's say a group of people who've had this autoimmune disease for years, if not decades, and they've reached a point where now there's absolutely no possible intervention that can reverse or even better manage their condition?
The only point of no return with absolutely zero leeway is somebody who's had their organ removed. Everybody else can see some. Even if you are full-blown autoimmune, only up to 25% of autoimmune is actually genetic. The other 75% you have control over. And so just because you're autoimmune doesn't mean it is genetic. It's just a predisposing factor. So even in the worst of the worst, you've had it for 20 years, it's full-blown autoimmune, and you have a genetic predisposition. We can still reverse 75% of your symptoms. And many of that, what that means for many people is they can live medication and pain-free and have a normal life. I got a guy I'm working with right now. I've actually been very, very blessed to get in touch with him. He just finished my program maybe 2, 3 months ago. He worked with me for 6 months, 16 years of ulcerative colitis. We traced it back. to his early years. It was that gallbladder removal that caused this wear and tear. We fixed his system, supplemented the ox bile, gave him what he was missing. Over 6 months, he is completely symptom-free, clinical, and histological. All his CT enterographies, his colonoscopies, and that's actually how one of his friends happens to have a TV show. It's Doug Kaufman for the Know the Cause. And so I'm actually visiting them in Dallas next month to go and do that because he's like, how did you do this? Let's talk. And so I've seen people, my longest is 20 years. And so I just, with her, managing stress was her main driver. She's already felt better. And so I say there's nobody, unless you've had the organ removed and we can't intervene, then everybody can get better. I've had people, even with no bowel, full colon resection, a total colectomy, who are having health issues, who are still able to get healthier because we did some things and helped intervene where the colon no longer could. So everybody can get better in every circumstance, notwithstanding the odd once in a million.
That's like the best news I think we've all ever heard. And I think
yes.
that we need to hear more of this instead of, well, that's it. I'm going to give you this many months and this is going to be your diagnosis forever. So this is so enlightening and so refreshing. And again, coming back to just some of the things that you shared. So we've got maybe a root cause that could be mold. We've got a root cause that could be antibiotics, other medication, but let's address the nervous system. And especially when it comes to trauma.
Yes.
And you just mentioned stress and obviously managing stress, but what about, let's say, trauma that we've had in childhood or trauma that we've had at a certain point of our lives, because that was actually my sort of situation when I had lost my mom. This was in 2019. That's where all my gut health issues started. And at that time, I had started to switch my diet a little bit. I was eating a lot more foods that I hadn't consumed in many years. I was paleo for a very long time, and then I was introducing grains and things like that. But I don't know, I guess it all must have come together. My gut health issues started the moment really my mom it was terminal at that point. And when I lost my mom, that whole entire year was a journey of trying to recover my gut health. And I had to fast. I mean, I was fasting for 72 hours at a time to really just overcome the inflammation. And the moment I would start eating something, that's where right away I would start to feel bloated. I would start to feel uncomfortable. I was feeling super full, even though I wasn't even done eating. And later, as I continued down this rabbit hole, I discovered that it was SIBO and there was other things going on. But I'm just curious, when it comes to, let's say, traumatic events, how can we address that? Or more importantly, how can we really pinpoint that that is the root cause? Because it's oftentimes we look at our nutrition, we look at other things going on in our life, we look at the medication we're taking, but we never really take into consideration any emotional trauma that may actually be manifesting the disease.
Well, there's a lot of ways to look at this one. So if we go all the way back to the body keeps the score, right? We go back to you can heal yourself, Louise Hay. Yeah. There's so many different aspects we can look at. We know, I've seen firsthand people physically holding trauma within tissue. And a lot of that might be in your gut. Some people it's muscles, some people it's joints. And that's something we're still exploring. I believe that's a genetic factor. For example, epigenetics are a big thing. It was an interesting study done with mice where they traumatized the mice by electrocuting their feet, right? It was electrically charged cage. Every time they put cherry blossom in, they'd shock the mice, right? Cherry blossom shock until they had PTSD. They'd smell the cherry blossom, no shock, and develop a fear response. They even found the mice's grandbabies, two generations down, having never smelled cherry blossom, had a negative reaction, a stress response to cherry blossom smell. And so we know these things are passed genetically. So that can be predisposing. Number two, your microbes. Your gut bacteria, there's about 100 trillion. It's 2 to 5 pounds or 3 to 5 pounds, the average adult, 2 to 3% of their body weight, outnumbering your own body cells 10 to one. And they do everything. I argue they're as or more important than our DNA. And the reason that is, right, they integrate with hormones and health and wellness. They signal back to the brain and do all kinds of stuff. But bacteria can actually be a leading cause for anxiety. Your bacteria can change in stress responses. Stuff we're still exploring. This is just brand new emerging science. But think, for example, they recently did a study on mice where they took a control group, the healthy mice, and put them on a calorie deficit. And those mice lost weight like you expect them to do. They gave heavy doses of antibiotics to kill bacteria in another group of mice who no longer responded to calorie deficits. They didn't get the same benefits or weight loss. So we know your bacteria is responsible for that too. People who have personality changes, we know there are certain bacteria responsible for how social you feel like being. Wow. And so that's something that we may discover in the next 10, 20 years about how trauma influences bacteria themselves, We also look at high cortisol can cause heavy stress responses, fight or flight, poor digestive enzyme production, poor digestive motility, stomach acid. It can wear out the gut lining that you have that's protective, so it can lead to inflammation and bloating in the gut. Gut bacteria changes under these high stress conditions can lead to bacteria that overproduce toxins, which lead to systemic issues. It can alter your immune system, both the gut, because 70% up to 90 of your immune cells and immune system is in your gut, right? They're all produced and made there, matured there. Stress can alter your immune function, actually trigger genes to that autoimmune condition. The neurotransmitters, that serotonin, dopamine, that's all 90% of it's made in your gut. And so if you want to have healthy brain and cognitive function, so any of these disruptions impact the rest like a trickle-down effect. And so you're trying to fill a wicker basket with water when you're just doing one thing at a time and wondering why you can't get it full. And so really, when we deal with emotion, stress, and trauma, it's all those things above in any combination. And it's our job as clinicians to dig in and figure out which ones are weighing the most important into the equation of your current sickness.
Right. Wow. So good. I love hearing you speak. And as you're talking, I'm like, wow, this is everything that we know globally around gut health is like a drop in the bucket of what's actually there. And it's so
Yes.
exciting to know that we're still learning every single day. There are more and more studies coming out. And just as you've expanded on even, let's say, transgenerational type of transfers of energy and traumas, this is super important also as we start to consider the link with mood and then also with behavior. And so this is just an exciting area to continue to explore. And along those notes, what about nutrition? Because there's a lot of discrepancy around the best nutrition for gut health, and I've had many different guests on the show who have also their different perspectives. So I'm curious what yours is, Josh.
I identify as nonpartisan. I like to say I don't pick a side. For me, I think food is medicine, but not all medicine works for everyone in all conditions, right? So if someone has bacterial overgrowths where a lot of those bacteria are producing a lot of bad byproducts, I might go animal-based or carnivore to kind of quote medicate that bacteria to not overfeed them, because bacteria love carbs, starches, fibers, fermentable fibers that they can turn into things. And if we use the analogy, I talk about gut bacteria like fish in a fishbowl, right? Your probiotics are the fish. The prebiotics are the fish food. They feed the microbe, they feed the organism. Postbiotics are fish poop. Now, in an ecosystem in a pond, there are critters that eat that fish poop. It gets used and upcycled and turned into things. Your body does the same. Your probiotics create postbiotics that are good for the immune system, inflammation. They are fuel sources. They make vitamins, B vitamins, vitamin K. And so if we have imbalances in bacteria, you're no longer producing those or underproducing. Instead, your bacteria are producing toxins that create inflammation, maybe causing asthma or arthritis or whatever it is. I might go to an animal-based carnivore diet until we can get those microbes under control so we don't feed the problem. On the other hand, I've had people come in who have a lot of bacterial issues, where they don't have enough good, and maybe I will feed them plant-based as medicine. But if you went to the doctor for a broken foot and I went in with asthma, they gave us the same medication to fix two different issues, you'd be asking questions. And I do the same thing with food. I will not use different foods work in different areas for different reasons. If we are clinically, as clinicians, we have to think critically, what is the application for this in this context with the person I'm seeing today? And we use it accordingly rather than a broad brush stroke as this is good for me, therefore it's good for everyone. That doesn't make sense in medicine. It doesn't make sense in nutrition.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting because a different perspective that I heard was, okay, in order to repopulate that good bacteria, you just continue to eat the plant-based food. And over time, then because the bacteria feeds off of fiber and fiber fuels the bacteria, then over time, you'll just build this sort of immunity, let's say, to all the side effects that you're currently experiencing, which is the bloat and the discomfort and all of that. And what is your opinion around that?
That works if you're trying to grow the good. But remember, the dominant species eat first, right? The big fish in the pond always eat first. And they'll eat the little fish. Your bacteria compete for space. And so if I have overgrowth of good and bad, and I'm eating a lot of fibers, they're both eating. If I have more bad than good, and I'm feeding fibers, the bad are eating first. And so to say, just eat the plants and it'll balance itself, that doesn't, I've never seen that work in my practice. And I see some of the worst gut disease that, again, Crohn's colitis. Imagine 50 bowel movements a day with blood and mucus. Like that's pretty severe, next to colon cancer. And I've never seen a plant-based diet work for overgrowth ever. Now, that being said, I've not used a ton of them because after the first couple didn't work, I stopped right away early in my practice. I was like, this is bad. And I went to animal and saw instant results with people. So to say feed them no matter what, I think is non-contextual. I think it misses the point, and I think it really brushes everybody with the same stroke. And you can't do that like we talk about in medicine. So SIBO, for example, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, plant-based is going to be highly problematic. Animal-based might be the way to go. Maybe you need digestive support. Maybe you need antimicrobials. If it's really severe, maybe you need antibiotics. I advocate for integrative medicine, which is both holistic and pharmaceutical where needed, holistic as much as possible, but don't shy away from pharmaceuticals if they can help. I've had clients with candida, severe candida, and I've recommended they talk to the doctor about fluconazole or Nystatin or some other antifungals to help with the process. In Crohn's and colitis, I see a lot of candida, but I often recommend if you're on drugs, I can't advise for drugs to say do or don't take. But I'm like, talk to your doctor when you feel ready to taper off. But for now, we need to take intervention because you are completely drug dependent. If I were to take you off your drugs right now, or you were to jump off them by yourself, rather, you'd probably fall apart and be unable to even do the program because you'd be in so much pain. So they're a nice gap to help bridge that gap until we can get to the ultimate place where your body is healing itself again.
Wow, so good. I love how you just married the two, and it's not this or that, and there's a place for everything. And I think that just shows who you are as a professional in general. And I just have to add that there. And so, again, under sort of the same topic and conversation, when we are, let's say, experiencing SIBO, and then we decide to just focus on more of a carnivore diet, the symptoms disappear. But is that not similar to just ignoring or avoiding the issue? Because we're just not going to introduce what is creating the aggravation or what's creating the symptoms.
Great question. So all bacteria eat, they eat something. And so if I have somebody with overgrowth and I go carnivore, you're right. By itself, it may be. I haven't done it fully where I've gone just carnivore to see how you do. In SIBO, a lot of the time, or other bacterial overgrowths or fungal carnivore, they get instant results. So they're already feeling better because they're not feeding the microbes causing the problem, right? They're not really feeding any of the microbes per se. But again, what it looks like in the science we're seeing now is that you can go on a carnivore meat-based diet. You don't need as much fiber as we've been told, which is an interesting point. But again, where the science is always going to be evolving. We're just scratching the surface of the gut. And so to say we're ignoring the problem, I think unless we attack it from all sides. So if I have somebody with overgrowths and I'm giving them carnivore, that's one part of the puzzle. But then I have to go with antimicrobials specifically targeted, or better yet, if it's possible and it works with them, go in with specific strains of micro or of probiotics because they compete for space. You have your bad guys, your gangs, your drug dealers. You have your good guys, your police, and judicial system, and provided it's not corrupt. But those good bacteria, for example, come in and they police the bad. And so, if someone comes in with like SIBO, there's some interesting research suggesting that like Lactobacillus reuteri, Dr. William Davis talks about that with a SIBO yogurt and how they've shown it to actually reduce and compete for space and bring down the bads, so the methane-producing bacteria. We've also seen in clinical studies where somebody who might be at risk, especially in IBD and antibiotic use, risk for a C. diff infection. That's your Clostridium difficile. Well, certain genus or strains of Lactobacillus or bifidobacterium in combination with antibiotic therapies have been shown to reduce the risk of C. diff infection or recurring infections. Saccharomyces boulardii, it's a common over-the-counter probiotic you can get. It's a yeast-based, and it's shown to inhibit the growth of candida. So when we use all these as therapies, so to speak, in combination with food and other interventions, now we have enough pieces to build a house. But if I say, yeah, I need a roof, well, where's your foundation? Where's your walls, right? There's more to it.
So good. Oh my goodness. So very clearly that, we really need to maybe individualize our approach towards optimal gut health. And obviously every
Always.
single person, there's a lot of bioindividuality. But if I were to ask, all right, Josh, give us, let's say, a few guidelines, because there's got to be some overlap here for all of us. Things like, and we hear this often, gluten or dairy or, let's say, sugar, alcohol, drugs, other things, even, let's say, ibuprofen or any other NSAID. So, what could we, let's say, take globally as some guidelines that we all could benefit from if we maybe incorporated these particular things? What would that be?
Everything you just said, first of all,
Good. Huge.
yeah, you're great. Verifiable. Everything, my knowledge around gluten is that it causes leaky gut for everyone, unquestionably. There's a lot of debate still in it. Dealing with Crohn's and colitis, everyone comes off gluten. Nobody gets alcohol, nobody gets sugar, nothing processed, nothing, the basics, right? It's not sexy. We just have to eat food that our great-great-grandmother would recognize as an edible substance. We eat food-like substances today, right? That's highly problematic. And so if it's not an actual food that we were designed to actually consume and break down, it's going to have byproducts, and byproducts create inflammation. Now, someone can go, well, I eat and I'm fine. Great. Well, eat gluten, then try alcohol, then add sugar, then add NSAIDs like ibuprofen, then add stress, see how you feel. By themselves, they may not be detrimental. In combination, it becomes death by a thousand cuts. And so we really have to watch this and see, like, what are the contributing factors? People often hear me speak and they go, oh, root cause, I'm looking for a thing. I say, no, it is multifactorial. For one person, it could be just the mold. For someone else, it's mold that created dysbiosis or an imbalance in gut bacteria. For the next person, it might be both of those things. Plus now it's created problems in digestion, metabolism, in their liver and their pancreas. For the next person, it's now caused cognitive issues and skin issues and joint pain, which has led to inability to exercise. So it becomes very combined, right? And so each person has a contributing factors, I call them, or, you know, combination causes. So that's the first thing. So deal with all those things as a whole, right? Just don't eat like a raccoon, whatever they can find in the trash. The second one people rarely talk about is how we eat. We always talk about what to eat, but very few of us address the fact that how many of us know the mom or the dad who runs the kids to and from soccer, shoves something in their face, their belly's full, eats in the drive-thru, is screaming at their kids, shut up, and they give them a whack and shove another food in their face. Imagine that much stress all the time. We have two main modes, we'll say, to our nervous system, as we know, right? Rest, digest, fight and flight. You cannot be in fight and flight while resting and digesting. And so if you're on the go, stop. Give your kids some morphine. Put them to sleep. I don't care. Get the chloroform. Don't do that. No, we're not saying do that. This is not medical advice. But if you were to stop, take a breath, slow down. That even just moving the needle, even if you're anxious, it just moves the needle closer to rest and digest. You're more likely to produce digestive enzymes, to produce stomach acid. High stress people have acid reflux because they have low stomach acid. That's the number one cause I see in my practice is low acid. And poor motility, so you're getting hyperfermentation, bacterial imbalances. Your gut is an assembly line. Imagine walking into Ford Motor Company and pulling five guys off the line out of 15. You'd have a mess. You have stuff piling up. You have cars with engines and wheels, and it'd be a disaster. The place would shut down. It happens in your gut. We're just lucky enough to have compensation mechanisms. We don't recognize how severe these complications are. And so it starts from cooking your food, touching, feeling. That starts, like, if you picture food right now, Sherry, your favorite food, you know, that salivating, you picture something sour. That's your body creating digestive enzymes in the mouth to start breaking down, which is antimicrobial and all kinds, before it gets into the system. That's what you feel in your mouth. Your entire gut does that. You think about food long enough, your stomach will gurgle like, oh, I'm hungry. It's turning up digestion. It's turning up hunger hormones, preparing for food. So touching our food, holding it, cooking it, smelling it, chewing 20, 30 times till it's small. These are critical parts we all miss because, again, it's not sexy. It's basic, but it's the basic fundamentals I teach everybody coming in. Watch what you eat, but watch how you eat.
So good. So good. And I think if we took it even just one step further, maybe one step before that, which is, where does your food come from? Do you know where your food comes from? And if you're purchasing, if you're deciding to consume meat, let's say, or animal products, where is that coming from? And then what about plants? Where is that coming from? What about the amount of pesticides and other things that are added to it to conserve shelf life? And so what are your takes on that, Josh? And how can we maybe be more aware around the importance of what it is that we're needing to look for? Because, of course, not everything that we purchase from the grocery store is going to tell us, by the way, we've got dye in here, just so that you know, and we've got all these other things. So how can we take on that responsibility to learn more about where our food comes from?
I mean, first thing is ask Elon Musk if any of those tickets to Mars are left available. That's probably a safe bet. But most of us can't grow our own food. If you had the luxury, do it. My wife and I were saving up for a homestead and a farm. Like, we want to have some space and grow our own stuff. My thoughts are this. If I'm eating meat, that's the one thing I'll buy organic. I'd rather eat less of it and have it be organic, meat and fruit, really, and have it be organic than I would eat inorganic in those cases. Just because of bioaccumulation, which is like, you know, a cow eats all these things, it gets into the tissues. The theory is that, you know, you magnify the dose inside the tissues, which you then consume. On the other hand, I will not eat inorganic fruit. I would rather go without fruit than eat inorganic fruit. In fact, I recently bought a bag of mixed berries. It cost me $30 for like 2 kilograms or a kilogram of these organic berries. First of all, they're incredibly delicious. They're more nutrient dense. I'd rather buy one bag a month than 3 bags a week of garbage berries. Gary Brecka, I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's a human biologist, used to work in insurance, and he would determine when people would die within like a month, which is crazy. That was his job. And he talks about a study. I haven't been able to find it, so call it anecdotal, but he talks about references a study where they actually took strawberries, inorganic, and put them in a commercial juice press and used the juice to respray crops with the same effect as pesticides would have in their raw form. And so fruits, because they're fleshy and soft, they absorb so much pesticides. But if you abide by a basic, like go to the EWG, that's the Environmental Working Group. I believe it's EWG.org. Every year they update their list, the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen. The Dirty Dozen are the 12 fruits, vegetables, or products that you should never eat unless they're organic. Every year, strawberries are number one on the list. Second to that, blueberries, spinach, apples, stuff like that. That's the Dirty Dozen. The Clean 15 are the 15 you need to worry about less. Pineapples, avocados, things like that. So if you buy those inorganic, no problem. It's way less of a concern than the Dirty Dozen list. So that's what I abide by. My meat, it's grass-fed, grass-finished. And a lot of people go, well, I can't afford organic. I can't afford grass-fed, grass-finished. It's too expensive. And they're right. It is cost prohibitive for a lot of people. But here's a life hack. Even if you live in like New York City, go to upstate New York, go find a farm, call around, see who's there, get a bunch of friends, chip in together, buy a cooler, go down, make a day trip, grab a tent. I don't care. Get out and go buy a half a cow, whole cow, chip in $100, $200 each and buy in bulk. Put it in your freezer and buy it right from the farmer because they are a butcher. And that's the best way to do it because you can check number one, do the farm meet my standards? Is it humanely raised? I prefer to eat meat from animals that are humane because one, I don't want to watch animals get beaten. I don't mind watching them get killed because they're food. Animals are food to me, but I don't want to watch animals be abused, right? Some people will disagree with that. Pete'll be up my ass about it. But on the other hand, if we look at things like even nutritionally, right, the level of stress, hunters will tell you. Animals that are shot with a gun, for example, that loud crack that maybe didn't die the first time you had to chase down, taste different than animals maybe shot silently with a bow who died instantly. Because of the chemicals, the hormones, the adrenaline in their system, they will taste less gamey if they are shot and killed in a very gentle way rather than, you know, being scared and stressed their entire lives. So the nutrient profile is even going to be different. And so it's up to us as consumers to understand where our food is coming from and give up convenience for quality. So many of us, I don't have the time. I don't feel like it. It's priorities, man. 9 out of 10 times, there are the odd people where it truly is a financial issue. I've had people tell me I can't afford good food. I'm like, great, let's go through your expenses. They've got $800 a month car payment. They have all these medications. They have a house that's too big. They're living above their means, right? My wife and I live well below our means, which is why we're able to afford stuff. I drive a 20-year-old car because I choose to. Could I buy a Mercedes? Sure. We talked about this just the other day. Like, don't want a new car because that will take away from the things we want to do, which is savings or travel or good food. And so it becomes a priorities issue a lot of the time in modern society.
So good. And it's another investment, right? We invest money in bank account and stocks, but when you invest in your health, I mean, we don't always see it that way, but it is an investment. And it's that one thing that when you lose, you will pay whatever it takes to get back. And
You
so
will
that's
pay more
why,
later.
right, absolutely, in one way or another. And so I always think about that. I always see my health as an investment, and I never cheapen out on gear that I have to buy for myself or the food that I'm going to eat or the things that I'm going to do for my health if I need certain supplements, because this is my opportunity now. It's so much harder to address something once it now has manifested into all of these symptoms in a greater condition than you can in preventing it. And so I think maybe we have to readdress our priorities, as you said, Josh, and this is something that we all can start to do. And as simple as looking at our budget and seeing where can we allocate a little bit more to maybe buy organic, and maybe we can reduce and eat out a little bit less and see how that can impact our health and just get curious around what that can create for us.
Yeah,
And
it's priorities and sacrifice. You got it exactly right.
yeah, so good. So I do want to talk a little bit. I just have one more question. Just super, super curious. Actually, I have two more questions for you, but first I want to address this one. So this is like the big buzz right now, right? Everyone talking about we got to address our hormones and fix our hormones, and you know the pathway to health is through addressing hormones. And I always see that as a side effect again of the root cause, which is the gut health. And I'm curious what your perspective around that is. That's now a big buzzword, just like going plant-based is, which is what I also want to shift into in just a moment. But what do you feel around that?
Yeah, I'm with you exactly. It is a byproduct of something else. Any dysfunction in your regular homeostasis symptoms, those are the things that your body needs to maintain regular daily life, your sleep-wake cycle, your hormone cycles, your digestion, like all those things are homeostasis. In a healthy, normal state, they will function just fine. The problem is 90 plus percent, statistically speaking, like you can read the data on this, some will say up to 97% of all North Americans are not metabolically healthy. Now, I use metabolism. We often hear metabolism and think weight gain, weight loss. It is any chemical process in the body used to maintain life. That's your hair growth. That's your wake and sleep. That's your digestion. That's your nail growing. That's your stress. All that is metabolism. Even sleeping burns energy. That's metabolism. And so we're not metabolically healthy, which is a huge problem. And so if we start looking at human beings as a whole and where these things are coming from, these imbalances like hormones, look at our lifestyles, look at our food, look at our food quality. If you go back and follow some of these indigenous tribes, right? The Maasai people have got a lot of popularity through the media lately for their mobility and their movements and athletic prowess. But these people, they don't have the fertility issues we have unless there's a genetic issue or nutrient deficiencies from a lack of availability of food. But most of them are carnivores and eat very animal-based. They will literally kill a goat, cut out a kidney and eat it raw. You know what I mean? So they have a very different lifestyle around food. On the other hand, look at aging. You know, after 50, 60 years old, I believe it's 60% of people over 50 or 60 years old in America are on two or more regular prescription medications. It's become normal. That doesn't make it optimal. We've just accepted it. We've accepted the slow degradation of health after age 30 and 40. Sometimes very rapid and go, oh, your joints hurt because you're older. It's your cognitive sucks because you're older. Oh, you have high blood pressure because you're older. Bullshit. That doesn't make any sense. There's a reason we have elderly in nursing homes filling things up, and these indigenous tribes have elders hunting and contributing to the community. They have elders, we have elderly. And it is a very different process when we actually look at how we're aging, and we are aging quicker because of chronic inflammation. And in fact, Cheryl, I'll throw one more at you. 14 out of 15 of the leading causes of death, as per the CDC, they're all chronic inflammatory conditions, can be directly related to your gut. The 15th cause unlisted is the umbrella of suicide or homicide, accidents, injuries. So that means every leading cause of death on the list that we're calling normal causes of death, heart disease, stroke, kidneys, liver, blood pressure, Parkinson's, all these things come directly back to inflammation chronically, most of which start in or are dramatically influenced by the gut, which means they're preventable.
Wow, just have to hold space for everything you just shared right now. And I think this is a big aha moment for all of us to take in. And the other thing that I just want to maybe create a little bit more awareness around is just the conversation. And I think many people will be super curious because, as we were talking about earlier, this whole plant-based movement. And I just finished watching this documentary on Netflix, okay?
Is that you are what you eat?
Oh my God, did you read my mind?
I've been seeing it go around. I just refuse to watch vegan propaganda, so I haven't seen it
Right.
yet.
And so I knew that was the message from the beginning, okay? But what's super interesting, and I think everyone should watch, is because the results may actually surprise you. It didn't go the way that I thought it was going to go. But of course, they start to tie in meat with inflammation, and then they start talking about, okay, we're giving, this group a healthy carnivore or omnivore diet. And a lot of that healthy omnivore diet was things like sausage and things that are store-bought. So, I mean, I already have sort of my own, aha and awareness around it. But I'm just curious, Josh, when it comes to that conversation, there's just so much science to back up both sides. Both sides are quote unquote right. What would you say really is, let's say, the way we are designed to eat? And of course, this is different opinions, but just from your own perspective, what is the way we are supposed to eat as human beings?
I believe as human beings, we are designed to eat animal-based and the occasional fruits off of trees. I believe that anything that grows in the ground for the most part is probably for the animals and the bugs and the critters. And here's why. Again, we look at a lot of these tribes, look at the Inuit people in Canada. If you were to go without vegetables for the rest of your life and you would eat fatty meats and organ meats, you'd be perfectly fine. Many people live their lives like that. A lot of these tribes do exactly that. And they're some of the healthiest they've ever been, that anybody can really ever be. I've never seen a very healthy vegan, truly vegan, who doesn't need supplements and all kinds of stuff. The nutrients aren't bioavailable, they're not there. Even if we consider, for example, and people are going to disagree with me vehemently on this one, but here's my thoughts. If we look at, for example, placentas, I actually have a video on my Facebook comparing side by side two women who gave birth the exact same hour, the placenta of the vegan versus the meat eater. The vegan was dry and pale and kind of pink and brittle, had like fissures in it. You could see these deep cracks inside of the placenta. The one who ate meat was robust and dark and reddish purple and had tensile strength. The other one was very brittle. And so even the availability of nutrients, we can clearly see in the development of a baby in its placenta, the difference between meat and animals, but meat and plants. And so I'm not saying to demonize, say plants are bad. I don't eat a lot of vegetables myself. I used to. I've actually gone animal-based this year and I've never felt better. My GI maps, my stool samples, checking my actual bacteria never looked better. I eat very little vegetables, mostly meat. I eat steak 3 times a day. My blood work, I've had that done beginning of last year in January. I just had a set done in November, December. It looks incredible. My inflammatory markers, everything's down as well. And so this is why I advocate for it myself. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Sheila Nazarian. She had a show on Netflix called Skin Decision, Before and After. She's a Beverly Hills famous plastic surgeon. I just published her episode today, and she was telling me vegans heal slower than those who eat meat. They have more inflammation, respond worse to surgeries, all kinds of stuff. And so that's my take. They respond slower. The placentas, it makes sense to me. On the other hand, I'm not saying vegetables are bad. I don't demonize one side of the other. I've created 21 different types of diets for my clients, some being heavy plant, some being heavy animal-based, depending on their profiles and needs. But ultimately, I say this: I don't think it's the plants themselves per se. I think it's how the plants are grown. They are monocropped. They are covered in pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, rodenticides. There was a study from the University of Texas back in 2004, I believe. They compared the nutrient sources from oranges and foods today versus what they expected nutrients to be, say, 50 years ago or 100 years ago. At the time, they suggest you might need to eat 8 oranges today to get the same nutrients as your great grandmother would have in one. Today, in 2024, that might be up to 20 oranges to get one that you would have had to, because there's no biogeochemical cycling, right? If an apple falls off a tree, it gets to the ground, it decomposes. Cow eats grass, right? Grass grows from that decomposed. Cow eats grass, I eat cow. That is biogeochemical cycling. Now we have dead dirt. We till the soil. The microbes in the soil, everything has a microbiome. The world is microbes and bacteria. That soil, the nitrogen, the microbes is dead. It's tilled over. So our dirt is there to grow a seed, artificially grown and stimulated with fertilizers. We don't have this natural carbon cycling, biogeochemical cycling like you would in a bioregenerative organic farm. Everything is artificial. So we're void of nutrients as well. And so that's what we're primarily eating, right? The same, we talked about biomagnification earlier, about animals, right? They get the pesticides in the tissue. On the same instance, if there's a nutrient void inside of our plants, one might make the argument, I have no data to back it up, but just hypothetically, might make the argument that you can biomagnify nutrients into animals as well and can consume that. And so the arguments go both ways. There's studies to back up all of them. There was an embarrassing study that came from Harvard recently that said red meat was bad. They had vegetables and plants and all these things and very selectively picked a few markers, but left out the rest they started with and ignored them at the end. But they had plants and plant-based diets and all these good oils, but their meat that they used was lasagna and sandwiches or burgers with like a Coke. And so we're blaming the meat as an additive, not the seed oils, not the high fructose corn syrup. And so it seems very biased. And so there's studies to back up both sides, but I have decided from what I can conclude to this point that in working with Crohn's colitis, animal-based seems to be the way to go. I don't demonize fruits and vegetables. They're not my preferred macro source of nutrients.
Wow, so good. What an answer. And so nice to listen to you. And I feel like I could just keep having this conversation. And if you're good, we can just keep going for another 4 hours. Josh, I'm sure you got
Oh
nothing.
yeah, I don't need dinner or food or anything. Unfortunately, I got a client in 6 minutes, but outside of that, it worked great.
Yeah, it's amazing how time has passed. And I want to honor you so much for your time today and all the value that you've shared. And if somebody wanted to reach out, Josh, to connect with you to learn more or to grab any of the resources that you have, where could they go to do that?
Yeah, easiest place to do that. There's two resources I can give you. First one is my website. That's gutsolution.ca. I do work all over the world for Crohn's and colitis, but through there, you can reach out. You can ask questions. If you have Crohn's colitis, want help, you can get help. There's a link there to the podcast. That's reversible. That's spelled Reverse Able, the ultimate gut health podcast. And we do 2 episodes a week. One is an interview with somebody famous, way more famous than I am. I'm not famous at all. And then the other one is just a short where I just answer questions and, users write in and they say, hey, here's what I'm dealing with. Can you help? And we will make an episode for you as a listener as well. That's all available at gutsolution.ca.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today, Josh. I love this conversation.
It's been a pleasure, Sherry. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.